There was a time when people would introduce me by saying Naga Bodhi doesn't need an introduction. Probably these days I do, but Dharmatri asked me if I needed one or wanted one, and I said no. I will introduce myself, so here I am. I'm Naga Bodhi, and
well,
thank you. And how amazing to be here in this fabulous space and with this fabulous crowd. And it's wonderful to see, well, to see people from my era, you know, to put it in those terms, but far, far more people from eras that followed right up to the present day. And just what a sight, you know, what a wonderful achievement, what a lovely point in our story. You might be wondering why I'm here and why I cut the ribbon. Why me? You know, there's so many people who, I imagine for a lot of you, you know better and associate with this place far better than you do me. So how did this happen? Really, by accident. as have a lot of things in my life and possibly yours. I gave a talk on the Order Convention last year about some just looking a little bit ahead at some of the factors and conditions that might be impacting on the order and the movement over the coming years. And in relation to that, I also talked a bit about the past. And at one point, I referred to events in Croydon through the 80s, the 1980s. And I got an email shortly afterwards from Dharmashri saying, "Can I talk to you?"
I came and spoke to you.
You came and spoke to me. I'm sure there was an email involved.
No, later.
We won't tell them about that. You know, she said, while not thinking that I had sort of was sort of guilty of the offence that she had in mind, but as somebody living here, working here, loving here, being part of this amazing sangha, you know, it's hard, you know, she admitted, you know, to be part of a sangha, part of a center, part of a world, of one of our worlds that has this iconic value in the movement's history as this place where something happened. It's the place where something went wrong. You know, we're so good, but of course, Croydon, you know, a warning from history and all the rest, which up to a point it is. But, you know, she was absolutely right. Croydon then isn't Croydon now. And wouldn't it be nice, you know, if you know, one associated Croydon, you know, with very positive times and very positive things, and what it is, you know, an extremely positive and effective Dharma centre and you know, nucleus of a wonderful growing and continuing sangha. So I said, well, yeah, I'd love to play a part in that. And so quick as a flash, she said, when will you come and give a talk? Sharing a Jewish background, you know, I appreciated that entrepreneurial instinct. Could only respond and say yes, okay. And so then followed the emails and the diaries. And this was the only date I could make. And as it got closer, I think what was a maybe turned into a definitely, that my visit would coincide with the weekend when it's Dharma, it's you know, Wesak, it's Buddha Day, but also it looked like the centre, the new shrine room would be ready for opening, and well, maybe I could do the honours. And again, why me doing the honours rather than coming and giving a talk on this day? There's a lovely bit of serendipity. Back in 1978, our Croydon Sangha, which over the last few years had sort of exploded into life, not exactly from a standing start, but from a very, you know, a very small start, and Paul way there towards the back, you know, and Mangala, you know, will remember well those days when Aryatara community began running yoga classes and meditation classes and developed the beginnings of our Sangha. You know, there were mitras. When I came along at the end of 1975, there were mitras. I think probably it's fair to say there were about 12 regulars, you know, but there was a nucleus, there was a beginning. Over the next 2-3 years, something remarkable happened. Ashoka Sri has turned up, Lalita Ratner is here, a tiny representative of the 80 or so people who became regulars in that very short space of time, many of whom were to join the order and be part of and caught up in much of what was to follow. But at some point along the way, we decided to start running some businesses, because that was the mood of the moment. They were doing stuff up in London and around the building project for building the LBC. We thought, well, why don't we do that too? And got a building in West Croydon very cheaply, because it was a burnt out shell, really, a derelict shell. Somebody called Mike Chivers, I don't know if any of you know it, impressed the council by, in 24 hours, producing technical working drawings. From going round it with me and an estate agent and a couple of us going back and looking at it, Mike Chivers in 24 hours produced technical drawings to show how we would use all three floors of that building. The top floor was going to be a shrine room. And I opened, and I'd been chairman of the centre at the time, I dedicated the shrine and gave a talk as we opened the shrine room in that building. And so here we are, 50 years later almost, opening another shrine room, and I happened to be passing by. thought I'd pop in and do it again. And how wonderful it is to be back to see those old friends and to see so many new ones. In 50 years' time, I'll do it again. I'm always available for opening Buddhist shrine rooms and bar mitzvahs. I mean, it was an astonishing time, and I'm very aware that there have been many other eras in the history of this centre. I mean, 50 years, since I think FWBO Surrey, as it was called, was established. I think Arnand has signed the documents for FWBO Surrey to be established. And it's a long time, and there have been many quite distinct eras with their own history, and several of them have very strong flavours. It's not as if the one outstanding era in Croydon's history is what you could call the Padmaraja era. There are many eras, with their stories to tell. So, I won't say too much about mine, but obviously, it means something to me. Not least because it all nearly didn't happen. When I first moved down here at Bante's request to Burley, to Ariatara, after 6 months, talking to people, being aware of people's plans and possibilities, there was a real possibility that we were going to close the place down and give the lease of Ariatara back to the owner. At one point, Bante was urging me to see if I could turn it into a community for the people working with me in Wintour's publications. But as sometimes happens to us in this line of business, one night, when we had rented Ariatara out to the Brighton Sangha for a weekend retreat, and I was up in my room right at the top hearing lots of people's voices and feet on the stairs, I just had a vision. It's as simple as that. I wasn't meditating, I wasn't asleep. It was a sort of waking vision of, why shouldn't it be like that here? It could happen here. And, it did happen here. I guess for me that was the impulse to recruit some friends of mine, Padmaraja, who I'd worked with at the BBC, for Sandra and Jyoti Parla to come and join me. I think we did quite a good job, and people came along, and we had this sort of thriving centre, and then what was to happen? Looking at Ashoka Sri sitting here, remembering her sterling work as the gas fitter and plumber. who'd have thought it? Fine training to be a public preceptor. I don't care what they say about us. But if you want a gas fire fitted, we're your man. Or woman. But then, things changed. There was a new era. And, let's face it, we were young. Or the people here, were young. We were all naive. We were all giving it a go. I had a meet up with Sumana, who I'm sure many of you know. He was one of the very first people to sort of come along as a beginner in my time. And years and years and years later, we were having lunch, and he said, do you know, when I came along, I assumed, you know, that you and Pat Maharaja and Vasantra, were all really sort of senior, experienced Buddhists. And it had only occurred to him, years later, literally years later, that I think I'd been ordained about 3 years when I became chairman here, maybe less. No, a year and a bit. Pat Maharaja, a couple of years. We were all in our 20s, just 20 turning 30, young, naive, doing our best. There weren't elders, there was Banti, but there was no one who'd been around even 10 years to say, well, look, guys, calm down, cool it, this is how you do it, your ideals are wonderful, but don't push, There wasn't any of that. So it was troubling what happened here is a lesson from history. Bad stuff happened. And, some people were seriously hurt and are still healing. So I don't want to underestimate that. But things have moved on. The Croydon that followed me wasn't the Croydon I'd lived in, and the Croydon that's followed those days, isn't the Croydon, that was there then. Things do change. It's a well-known, well-worn Buddhist principle. Things move on, things change, conditions change. And nothing is fixed. And I think what's lovely about today, and this isn't the first time it's happened, I know, but it's yet another reminder that things can be new, things are fresh. That this principle of beginner's mind, is an important principle running through our Dharma life, that every day is new, every meditation is new, every shrine room is new, or should be in our minds. Vijayashri was saying a minute ago that it's not just about a building, it's about us in various ways. I'll say a bit more about that in a minute. But whether it's here or whether it's here now or in 1978, a new shrine room, is an exciting and important moment in history. When I launched the centre back in 1978, and I think I'm correct in remembering that Banti was there, sitting at the back of the room, which made me rather nervous. But I spoke of the shrine room because it was just a shrine room. The centre was still back in Purley. But, here in Croydon, we turned the top floor into one big shrine room. And I spoke of that room as a seed, a place from which things would grow, a place from which things would happen. And I guess looking at this room, sparkling, spanking new, all this effort that's gone into it, this lovely new wooden floor, the new shrine, one has gratitude today for the people who've made it possible, the people who designed it, the people who worked on it, the people who raised the money for it. But, no doubt, you're much more aware than I am of what's gone into the making of this room. But when I sit here, and when I sit in, particularly sitting in a new shrine room, it becomes obvious to me that this is the beginning of countless journeys. You're here now. But it's possible there are people who are not yet born, even, who in 16, 17 years' time might come in here. People who've never heard of Buddhism, might in 2 years, or tomorrow, or next week, turn up here, and stuff's going to happen. People are going to do their first meditation in this room. People are going to have their first experience of dhyana in this room. People are perhaps going to have their first flashes of insight in this room, maybe just looking at the Buddha Rupa, maybe hearing a talk, maybe in their meditation. And of course, in this room, they're going to change, they're going to transform, but also their relationships are going to transform. Around the nucleus of this room and what happens in this room, there's going to be a new kind of depth, a new richness, a constant unfolding potential coming not just into the individuals but all the people, and into the kind of friendships that are formed in this centre, in this room. Vijayashri spoke about that quality of friendship, that a Sangha is more than a centre. A Sangha is you know, this association of people, an association of individuals, a very special aspect of Buddhist life, and I think a really special and central aspect of Tri Ratna life. I just want to expand on something Vijayashri said, because something that impressed me that Banti said years and years ago, I mean, I think he wrote it in a book review, and it struck me as being crucial. He said that a Sangha doesn't happen in space, it happens in time. Yeah. What he meant by that, and you know, what I take away from that, is this recognition that it's not just about being in a room, and it's not either just being together, being a nice, friendly bunch of people. It's about how we come together. It's about how we connect. It's the way we communicate. It's what we bring into the situation. It's what we bring into each conversation we have with each other. I mean, just to go back to my era, I call it my era, it's our era. You know, there were a lot of us very much collaborating. I think in that era we stopped at some point having council meetings, and our council meetings became a meeting of everyone involved in the project, you know, which was a great way to do it for a while. You know, so it was very much our era. But I think when I look back and think, well, why is it that our Sangha went, you know, from a small bunch of about 10 people, you know, to 70, 80 people in the space of about 2 years. I mean, we were ambitious. You know, we were young and ambitious, and that was partly because the people up the road at Sukhavati in the London Buddhist Centre, you know, were all oiking around and laughing at us, you know, this effete bunch of people in leafy Burley, you know, while they were doing the hard yards up in Bethnal Green. And, you know, we were a bit of a joke. You know, so, you know, I have to confess, you know, we were going to bloody well show them. And do you know, we were the first cooperative to register. We beat them. The Rainbow Co-op was registered before the Pure Land Co-op. The building project of our centre and the Whole Food Shop and Cafe came in under budget and ahead of schedule. And I don't know if that's ever happened anywhere else. But I go on. But I think, what was it? I think in particular, there were a few of us, you know, I can't speak for myself, I think I was good at some things, but, you know, I just want to put in a word, you know, and it's not easy. I did this in New Zealand, and people actually wondered if they'd heard me right, but, you know, Padmaraja, Vasantara, Jyoti Parla in their way, had a knack. Maybe we all did. You know, that somebody who came to the centre, and I think people who were around will know what I mean, felt that they had met someone who had the knack of seeing who they were and what they were capable of. You know, it was something we talked about. It was what we wanted to bring to what we did. We weren't there to just teach meditation or to, you know, run a this or run a that. We did all that. We did it well, I think. But I think there was something quite special about the way, and I think particularly actually of Padmaraja, and you know, if you went as and when the novel's written, and Satchidaka's, you know, may well go into this, I don't know, you know, but you know, to some extent it was the roots of some of the problems, you know, his talent, his extraordinary talent for connecting and connecting in people's depths, and I think that was something we had. You know, and when I think of Sangha and I think of that teaching of Banti's, that Sangha happens in time, accepting, you know, the caveats and, you know, the power that comes out of that kind of communication when we give ourselves to other people in that kind of depth, we do make ourselves vulnerable, we do open ourselves. But that is also, you know, the dangerous, you know, space that we maybe bring into our communication in the Sangha, that willingness to really meet, to really speak from our depth, to really speak from our vulnerability, you know, and to learn on that level, to transform on that level, to meet ourselves and to meet others where we really live. So I think, you know, when I see this room, you know, which is a fresh start, it's something new. And the room itself is important. It's important as a facility, and it's important as a simply as an aesthetic support to what's going to happen here and elsewhere in the centre. You know, but it's the sort of focal point for something else, this emergence of depth, which then we share with each other. And when we do that, not only do we simply enjoy Sangha, but who knows what will come out of it. In our case, what came out of it was the building, you know, of a world, you know, a new society type world, which we were of an age, and the society supported us to do it, and the movements, you know, the movements' preoccupations supported it. That's what we did. You know, other people might do who knows what, but it's going to come out of what happens in this room, and it's going to come out of how you, one, takes from this room. You know, all that's coming, creativity, richness and depth, out into the way you relate around the centre and within the Sangha. I went to another new centre once. I visited Kulananda, my mate Kulananda, in Cambridge. And he'd moved there with Windhorse Trading. And he was so in love with Cambridge. He wanted to show off his parish to me. And we spent a day walking around. He was showing me the colleges and these secret alleys and lanes that he discovered. And we came across, in one of the colleges, a poster advertising a Beethoven marathon today. Anyone welcome, bring your instrument. So he went in and sat down in the audience, and they just started the pastoral symphony, and so they were working their way through all 9 Beethoven symphonies, and anyone could turn up at any point and join in the orchestra or come and watch, come go. And they were just starting the pastoral symphony as we walked in, and it was wonderful that people came, violinists came, went, 3 conductors, you know, came and went during the course of that one symphony. You know, sometimes it was just really scratchy, just a few people there, just keeping the notes, keeping the melody going, and then just occasionally, and sometimes for, you know, a second at a time or 5 seconds at a time, something happened. It was like, whether it was because they were listening to each other or the right people were playing in the right way for a few minutes, but I don't know how it happened, but suddenly this sound of people playing instruments went away, and you were in the presence of something colossal. You were in the presence of the symphony, you know, in the presence of Beethoven's genius. And then it was gone. You know, it came and went, you know, through that, you know, 40 minutes, whatever. This incredible experience of just catching these momentary glimpses, more than glimpses, experiences of being in the presence, you know, of the symphony, of everything it was. And then it went. And it, you know, for me, it's a perfect, you know, it's a perfect representation of what happens, you know. We don't take Sangha for granted, you know, any more than we can take what will happen in this room for granted. But, you know, if we touch it for a few seconds even, a few minutes, or an evening in a conversation with a friend, or in a puja, or in a dedication ceremony, something like that can feed you for months, maybe years. You know, a moment, you know, or 5 minutes of it, you know, if you can create a world in which it's happening or it's flavoured by that all the time, well, you know, so much the better. You know, so, you know, it's very appropriate, you know, this dedication ceremony that Banti wrote, you know, for the opening of the London Buddhist Centre. You know, it's important, you know, here may no idle word be spoken, you know, here may no unquiet thought disturb our minds. And, you know, what it's about, you know, whether it's in our meditation in this room or in the puja or in the way we talk, you know, we don't forget while we're here, you know, maybe it's the decor and it's the shrine and the general ambience of the place. We create a mandala in which, you know, we're reminded all the time, at least while we're here, you know, that it's about making our own efforts towards enlightenment. And what we do here, you know, I mean, to sort of wind up a bit, you know, what we do here, you know, of course it's for us, and of course it's for those people who are going to stumble on this place, you know, one day, whether it's next week or next year or in 10 years' time. You know, yes, it's for that. You know, it's for what? You know, it's for making Buddhists, making order members. It's for creating Sangha. But, you know, I've never forgotten an experience I had when I was teaching at the London Buddhist Centre. I'd been there about 5 years. And I was invited to a dinner party by some people from one of our classes. I didn't know them very well, and I was sat at a table next to two people I didn't know. And I got talking to the woman next to me, and she said she'd been, you know, she asked me what I did. I told her I worked and lived at the London Buddhist Centre, and she said, oh, I went there a couple of times a few years ago. Oh, yeah. She said, yeah, I learned to meditate. I said, oh, what, the breathing one? And she said, yeah, that one, and the one about love. And I said, oh, yeah, yeah. But you never went back. She said, no, I just went a couple of times. And it was nice. And I sort of had another bite of my pudding, not as good as Donald Trump's, but it was a good chocolate cake. And I said, almost on impulse, I almost didn't bother to say it. I just said, do you ever meditate? She said, yeah, every day. We don't know. We don't know what we're doing here. You know, we sometimes can get trapped in this idea that it's about the order, it's about mitras, it's about, you know, our sangha. But the influences that flow out of this room, you know, are incalculable. You know, well, think of the Buddha alone one night under a tree. You know, think of Bhante, you know, Sangharakshita in India, you know, studying the Dharma, meditating, kind of, you know, with his Tibetan teachers, and then deciding, you know, to come back almost by accident, you know, to come back to the West and try and do something. You know, we don't know what can follow even from one person's inspiration. You know, what flows out of this room is incalculable. It is, you know, a source of richness, wonder, you know, and joy to the world. And the world needs it. I know we Buddhists talk about samsara. You know, like at the end of a retreat, no, I'm going back to samsara. Or, you know, in this centre, it's great to be able to shut out the noise of samsara. You know, maybe people don't talk that way. I've got strange friends. But, you know, I think for most of my lifetime, you know, I'm 69, so I'm one of these privileged baby boomers. You know, I've lived in a stable world of, you know, relative prosperity for many here in the West. You know, relative political stability and so on. You know, the world's been warming up, but not enough, you know, to impact much on me and people of my generation and so on and so on. But, you know, I look at the world at the moment, and I did once kill a dinner party. some people, I live in Stroud, you know, just gradually getting to know a few people, and, you know, I don't have much time to have that kind of social life, but, you know, every now and then experimentally hold a dinner party. And I just said quite sort of innocently, like, what's it like to be a parent, you know, with young kids, knowing that they're going to be growing up in, you know, in a world that's changing in ways we can't predict. And it kind of killed the dinner party. You know, there was sort of a sort of rather stunned silence.
So, well, that's not a very nice question, or a difficult question.
That changed the subject. But, you know, I feel, you know, I just feel it, you know, that things are coming. You know, the world is not so straightforward, even here in good old Blighty. You know, things are changing. It's going to be tougher and harder in the world. And well, the Dharma is a contribution. You know, the Dharma does. I'm not saying it's got all the answers for everyone in every place at every moment. But what we have, what we can acquire in ourselves and what we can offer the world is of value. Of immense, incalculable value. Bhante once, in summing up after a very overcomplicated Dharma appeal I'd made for Windhorse Publications, just said, well, imagine you were in a country which had a famine and people were dying, and you happened to be sitting, you know, in a lovely place with an enormous warehouse full of food. Wouldn't you want to share it? You know, it's as simple as that. You know, How you'll share it, you know, I don't know, but you know, what's going to happen here in this room and what will flow out of this room will be taking something out into the world. It will make a difference. You know, I have absolute faith in that. And the history of this centre, for all its ups and downs, you know, it is, well, look at it, you know, here you are. And those people who are now, you know, who I know, remember from my era, you know, who are spread around the movement elsewhere, spread around the world, people who maybe only came to two classes, maybe only one. I don't know how it's affected their lives. I don't know what they're giving to the world, perhaps as a result of what they got, what seed got planted in them when they strayed into a Tree Ratna centre, into a Tree Ratna shrine room. Shanti Deva says that, look, you know, if the Buddha's compassion meant there was no more suffering in the world, well, people wouldn't be catching fish and killing animals, you know. So let's not get too, you know, hyperbolic. You know, it's not, we're not going to be miracle workers and cure all the world's suffering. But he goes on to say, you know, what happens in the spiritual life is that you work on consciousness, you work on your mind, you work on your impulses. And as a result of that, you do things. You know, something, the fruits flow out from that. You know, they flow out from individuals, they flow out from the Sangha, they flow out of this room. You know, so that's, to me, the significance of this moment. You know, it's a fabulous achievement. You've created this space. You know, but when I think ahead, you know, what incredible stories there will be to be told, you know, in another 50 years' time, you know, that began right here in this room. I don't know whether there's a plan during the day for a threefold sadhu, but there really ought to be one. Shall we do it now, or have you? Yeah? We could always do another one if you had it planned. I really do think, you know, that whether it's for all the people who've made this room possible, and thinking of all the people who are going to benefit from it, including yourselves, shall we have a really good, rousing threefold sadhu?
Yes.
Sadhu! Sadhu! Sadhu!
Thank you.